My name is Nancy. I'm an addict. I'm grateful to be here and grateful to be clean. I don't know how this works. Okay. I forgot to bring my phone for timing, so somebody tell me when 20 minutes is up, please. Did I say I was grateful to be here and grateful to be clean? I am. Okay. If I don't say thank you, good, because I can talk too long. If I don't tell you anything else, that's the truth. And the most important thing in my life is that I'm an addict and I am grateful to be clean. I'm grateful to Narcotics Anonymous, and I want to thank the committee for asking me to share. It's an honor and a privilege to do anything to give back to this fellowship that it has given me so much, has given me my life, a life. Stacy, I want to welcome you to your journey and just pray that you stay here and you find the things that you're looking for here, but mostly that you find freedom from active addiction, because that is our promise. And you are in the right place if that's what you want. That's what we offer. And I'm so glad you're here. I kind of figured there weren't going to be a lot of newcomers, because who wants to hear a bunch of old people talk, right? But there weren't a bunch of old people speaking before, and I want to thank Annie and Rick again for your message. And Roya, for coming for so far, and Caitlin, and I really appreciate the message that both of you carried, and I also really, really appreciate how highly you spoke of your significant others and your relationships. Those are things that are so important in our lives, and I don't always hear that from the podium, and I'm really, really grateful to have heard it tonight. And the respect and the love that you spoke about your partners with means a lot to me. And so I have a partner and a significant other and a husband, my husband Jack, who I have been able to share this journey with in recovery. And gentleman that I'm sitting with asked me tonight, did you guys meet in a meeting? And we met in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. So Narcotics Anonymous has given me everything that is important to me in my life today. And my partner has taught me a lot about, Annie talked about self-esteem and honoring who we are. And through this journey, my husband has actually helped me look at that and work on self-acceptance. His acceptance and his love and support of me has helped me become someone who has more love and respect and self-acceptance for myself. I have always thought of myself as a strong woman, a strong person. I identify with women. I think that women are they're very, very important to me in recovery. And my partner and our partners, both men and women, are also just in my life, in my recovery, that is a very important part of it as well. And sometimes that reflection or the way people talk to us or treat us back, the people that we choose to be intimate with, help. This addict has been helped by seeing that reflected in somebody else's eyes who loves me unconditionally. So thank you. Gosh, I'm a little nervous tonight. I'm not always nervous, but I am tonight. I heard so many good things. I'm just really grateful. We have just we just lost two members. I just recently found out that we lost two members of our very small recovery in our meeting in Three Rivers, our small group. And And I'm struck by how grateful I am. How grateful I am to be alive. How grateful I am that I have grabbed onto this message of recovery. And how desperate I think I was when I got here, and how desperate I still am for recovery. I still go to meetings. I continue to work steps. I continue to work with others. I continue to be of service. I continue to make phone calls. I talk to my sponsor at least once a week, if not probably a lot more often than that. Because I am still desperate for this program. I am desperate to continue to live this life. And this is how I know how to do it, is through you people, through a higher power, and through this program, which I believe Narcotics Anonymous is always guided in that same way. We are one addict sharing with another, guided, I believe, by a power that's greater than, well, certainly greater than myself. My using is really no different than anyone else's. I started about 12 years old. I never felt like I fit in, even in my family. I always was very aware of always how I looked. I always felt I looked different than everyone else, certainly my peers. I have frizzy red hair and freckles. I was a different religion than most of the people that I grew up with or was around at all. I had some early memories of being taunted because of my religion. I'm self-focused. I'm sure I was always very, very, very self-focused. But those are my early memories, and drugs helped me get out of myself or not care or feel like I looked good or fit in or whatever it was. And I used way beyond where it wasn't working anymore, but I used till it was, what did Rick say? It was fun and trouble. Then it was nothing but trouble and pain. Using became very, very, very painful. And I used until I came to my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. And I used until I didn't want to live anymore. And I used to the point where I was trying to find a way to kill myself. And trying to figure it out using whatever I could, or walking in front of a car, or whatever it was that I was going to do. I felt like a walking scream. I felt like I walked through the world screaming and no one could hear me because I couldn't make a sound. And that's how I felt. I lied about everything. I didn't know what the truth was anymore. I used my body as a tool to get drugs or to make you like me. Sex, specifically. I use sex to... I'm not going to mince words. That was the point that I walked into my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And I got clean in a place... I thought that 12-step programs were religious programs. And I thought, once again, you were going to not like me, or you were going to tell me I had to be a certain religion, and I had to believe in your God, and I didn't care anymore. I mean, it was at that point where I'd been lying about everything else. If I came in here and said what you wanted to hear, and you gave me whatever pill it was that was going to stop me from feeling this way anymore, I didn't care what it was, but I needed to not be in that place anymore. And my other option was dying, so I thought, well, I might as well give this a shot. I got clean in a very small town, in a very small meeting, the Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I went first to I had been told that there was a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in a little Alano club, in Solvang, California. And they told me that there was an NA meeting there, but I walked into the wrong meeting because there was a meeting of the other fellowship going on at the same time. And I introduced myself as an addict. And these very nice people patted me on the shoulder and picked lint off my shirt and told me to keep coming back. And they were talking about hiding bottles and stuff. And I'd never hidden anything from myself. I did everything that was there, and then I went looking for more. So I just really couldn't relate to that. But they were very nice, and they told me to keep coming back. And apparently, this is my little miracle, my little... when I shared, there were quite a few people at that meeting for this area, at that AA meeting that I went to. There were probably 15 or 20 people. And as fate would have it, the addicts who were meeting in the closet in that Alana club got out of their meeting because there were like three of them. So they got out of their meeting and walked out of the room while that other meeting was going on at the exact time that I was introducing myself as an addict. And so one of them left literature for me from our fellowship. So a couple nights I kept using, and a couple nights later I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And our literature and our readings spoke to me like nothing ever had before. And I have been able to stay clean and be clean from my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous was January 1st, 1988. And it's because of this fellowship that, and our message and the power of one addict helping another. We had, I think there were two meetings a week, and a lot of times we listened to speaker tapes because there were three of us, and the most time was, I think she had 90 days, the person with the most time. So one of our meetings was a speaker meeting, and we listened to speaker tapes, but that's how the journey started. And every once in a while, there would be an addict who would come from somewhere else, and they would share something, and I just listened to everything and took every suggestion that I could get. Every suggestion. I remember someone was visiting there one time from Los Angeles, and she told me, pick up the phone. She said, I don't care how much it weighs. I don't care what else you do. It doesn't have to be your sponsor, but you should call three people every day. And you should go to a meeting every day. Well, we didn't have Narcotics Anonymous, but I still went to a meeting every day. I went wherever I could. And eventually, in my first year, we had 7 meetings of Narcotics Anonymous a week in that little town. And I got into service very early in recovery. I was a GSR. I think I secretaried a meeting. I started going to area service committee meetings and got involved that way. I think I had 90 days, but I was breathing and interested, so they let me be of service. I went to workshops. I remember a workshop that Ventura area was putting on. That was our regional head at that time, was in Ventura, and for that area. And this workshop, the guy says, how many of you are GSRs? And I raise my hand. How many of you are secretaries? And I raise my hand. How many of you are, you know, it just went on like that. And I kept raising. And several people were doing the same kind of thing. And he's like, you're okay, this is the NA railroad. You're doing a little bit too much. This is called overservice. Leave some positions for others, but keep being of service. So, you know, I just dove in any way I could and every way I could. And I went out of town for meetings. And it was in that meeting in Solvang, that little meeting in Solvang, that my husband walked into, my now husband walked into. And you know, I was a newcomer. But he He told me he was coming to support recovery in Solvang, is what he told me. Months later, he told me he was coming looking for girls, so it worked out both ways. So, and fortunately, he also worked a program, and he had a sponsor, and he had sponsees, and he treated me as he put my recovery in front of his own, and treated me with that kind of love and respect. And as I said, I was a sick newcomer. Boy, if you want pain, and I'll tell you from this end of it, date a newcomer. As long as you put their recovery first, and you treat them like a newcomer, and their spiritual journey and their spiritual well-being is more important than yours or anything else, and you work your own program and allow them and support them to work their own, that's a big order. That's a tall order. And that's how I was treated. And I'm grateful still for that. But I know that he went through a lot of pain because of doing that too, and allowed me to grow and to change. And I, you know, this process is not always easy, and I have made mistakes and continue to make mistakes in recovery. But it's been a while. I've been monogamous and married for 30 years now. That's a big change. That's a big, big change. I wore boots tonight in the car on the way down here, and they looked a lot better than my tennis shoes. But you know what? I'm about feel good today, not about look good. So, and I'm so grateful for that. I can stand up in these shoes, and my back doesn't hurt the whole time, you know. And I can walk, and it's really important for me to do that. And you know, I'm 61 years old, 60 wonderful, and 31 years clean, and 30 wonderful years clean. Thank you. Because neither of those things are possible without Narcotics Anonymous. And life is definitely, as I've been told, I've had incredible, wonderful experiences living in recovery. I've traveled. I've been able to travel a lot. I have had several careers that were incredible. I've been able to finish my education. I have a degree. That it took a long time to get that, and I finished it after I was clean. And I've had incredible losses. I think I was a person. I just always assumed I would have children. I don't know that I was like, I have to have a baby, or that wasn't like the only thing I thought about when I was growing up. But I just always thought that would be, that's just part of being a woman, right? So, and in my active addiction, I got pregnant multiple times, and because I told you I used sex as, you know, what I used sex for, and I wasn't real good about using birth control, so I did get pregnant multiple times, and I terminated my pregnancies. I did not want to bring a baby into this body at that time, using and doing what I was doing, and I didn't want to stop using. I mean, that was the truth. And so I made those choices in active addiction. And as fate would have it, I did get pregnant. Jack and I got pregnant right before we got married. And so I was older, but I was still pregnant and getting married, and my baby died at birth. My son died at birth. Boy, we're talking about sons today, aren't we? And that was a life-changing event. That was a life-changing event, and still is. There are times now, and that was 30 years ago. It will be 30 years in December that he was born and died. And even today, I still, you know, there's those times where it's like, you know, this realization of what my life is like today because I don't have that baby in my life. And I'm not going to have grandchildren. And I didn't go to graduations and do all of those things. My life is my life, and there's still that level of acceptance that it's like that surprises me. I think it surprises me because there's still those levels of acceptance that happen with different passages, times in my life. And you know, sometimes I go through these periods of just sadness and I can't put my finger on what's going on. It's not like there's something wrong. And I have so much to be grateful for, but there are times when I'm just sad. There are just times when I'm sad. And whether it's that or not, I don't need to know all the time what that sadness is about. It's just honoring it, feeling it, and moving on. I'm in a period at this point in my life where my mother is still alive, and I'm grateful for that she's in my life, and she's aging. She's still very stubborn. She's still wanting to live independently, which is all of that is great, but it's also very difficult. I question who I am as a daughter. I'm always wondering, am I doing enough? Am I doing the right thing? How do I do this? Another new phase of my life. And I get to go through this clean and figure this stuff out. How do I continue to be the best, most loving, caring daughter I can be? How do I show my gratitude to this woman who raised me, who gave me birth, who gave me life, who raised me, who, you know, all of the things that she did, whether I like her all the time or not, because I don't, but that's irrelevant. She's still, and I love her and respect her and want to give back. How do I show, what have I learned here that it's an action? My gratitude is an action. How do I show that? How do I do that? And that's been, you know, watching her age and watching her go through these things and knowing that I'm not that far away from that either. And how do we do this? How do I do this stuff? Every step of the way has been through the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. One of the powerful lessons, and I heard it tonight, about sharing the sad things or the hard things that happen to us, or the miracles, or the whales on the beach, for God's sakes, is that we have an opportunity to share that, and that we got through it. I got through it. We got through it. And so that maybe we can help somebody else get through that same thing clean. And that there is hope on the other side, that the pain won't always be this bad. Whatever it is right now, it won't always be this bad. And that has been my lesson from that. And when I lost my son, when I lost my baby, Michael, I remember being in the hospital, and of course I was in, you know, I was in emotional pain. I was devastated, and nurse came in and offered me a sleeping pill, asked me if I was in physical pain, and I actually was honest and said no, and I was 2 years clean, just shy of 2 years clean, and my sponsor was there with me, because we show up for each other, and she was there with me. And I said no to the medication because I knew if I started, I wouldn't stop. and that I would, that pain would be there to meet me when and if I got lucky enough to stop again, to stop using. As soon as I got out of the hospital, I remember this, just this desperation, this pain that was so intense and so bad that I was immobilized. And I started calling recovery homes. Do you have any newcomers that need someone to talk to? Can I come over? I'm going to meetings, sharing about the pain. And then I had a young sponsee who we were pregnant at the same time, and she was in the hospital in labor. Well, she was in false labor at that point. She wasn't having the baby. But I went over there to be with her, and she was going to be sent home. And I went to the nurse's station. I was so desperate. I went to the nurse's station, and I said, look, you're going to think I'm nuts, but this is what I just went through. Do you have anyone here who needs to talk to someone that may have gone through this? And the nurse she said, yes. There's a woman who just lost her baby, and let me go see if she would like to talk to you. And I went into this, to the room, and I was able just to listen, actually, just to listen. And I think I was 2 weeks away from this, losing my son. And I was able to tell her that it'll get better, it won't be that bad. And that was all I had to say, you know, and I just was able to listen. She said, no one wants to talk to me. No one wants to listen to how I'm feeling. And so I just did and told her I had been there. And you guys taught me that pain shared is pain lessened, and that by being of service to someone else, I was in 2 weeks, you'll feel a little bit better, you know, after this is done, in a couple weeks. I'm not saying the pain is gone, but you will start to feel a little bit better. And I went outside, it was raining, and I went outside and I cried and I thanked my higher power. I just said, oh my God, this, you know, I just prayed to be of service, to have some kind of answer for something. Why? Because why me? Why now? Why this? And I just thought, what you guys have taught me is that there's always something, some way to share and to help, which is why I still share this from the podium, because it is important. There are other people who have gone through this, and it is for us to share and to know that these experiences can and do get better, and we can stay clean no matter what. So, you know, it's just still that pivotal place in my life. It's still something that affects me and will affect me probably for the rest of my life, and drives me into service, continues to drive me into service and into gratitude. And I am in the place where I am so grateful that I carried that baby for 9 months, and that I got that gift, and that I gave that baby for that period of time, whatever his journey was, that I gave him a safe, healthy place to be, and that I got the gift of carrying him for his brief time on earth. And that took years, but that's where I am today with that, and I'm grateful for that too. And that's part of this process, writing steps, working the program, always working with others, and sharing. You know, what I pray for when I get up here to share, and I'm not as nervous now, but I pray to get out of the way of my higher power, and that the message that I believe that I get from my higher power and that this program has given me is to carry the message of love and hope and service, and that whatever stuff I have gets out of the way, and that message is carried And that's what I have to give, and what I am committed, hope that I get to continue to give, because I receive so much more as I continue this journey in recovery. Jobs come and go, but these relationships, jobs, careers, I've just reinvented myself again in a career and went back to school with a bunch of 18 and 20 year olds, and it's always a little bit humbling. It's always a lot humbling. I've always been the oldest. I was the youngest person in my circle of friends and cool people, and now I'm always the oldest in any certainly learning situation. But I went back to school to be a manicurist, of all things. And so that I can give other people some feel good and look good and a little bit of a hand and foot massage and maybe make a little bit of a living doing something like that. So, I'm just grateful that I have the opportunity to learn, that I'm willing to. But mostly the things that stay are the relationships, our relationships with one another. That's the therapeutic value. It's not only the therapeutic value, but it's what feeds me, is these relationships. My relationship with my husband, my relationship with the women in these rooms. I mean, you guys give me so much, and you show me how to walk through this. And always when I feel like I've got the worst and the saddest, I get to a meeting and I will take my own problems back 100% of the time. I am so grateful, and I'm so grateful for you for walking through this stuff in front of me, behind me, beside me, and showing me how to do this and continuing to. How to live clean, how to go through each and every one of these experiences, getting married, enjoying all of that, having bridal showers. Dang, I didn't want to go to the bridal shower. I was like, a bridal shower? I'm too old for a bridal shower. And what a blessing and a joy to go and participate in your joy and your happiness. I'm so grateful. I'm not too old for anything, and I'm not too young for anything. And I am right where I'm supposed to be, in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, grateful as hell to be here, to be alive, and to be clean. Thank you.